Bonus, bish.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a Wednesday show of the Bituation Room, I guess. It's a bonus, bish, a little BB on a WED. I am Francesca Fiorentini. We're going to see how this goes. We're going to see how Wednesdays go. We're going to see if we can't, squeeze more news in. Squeeze stories that I haven't been able to talk about because we're too busy talking about everything else. That's cryptic and weird. But I'm excited that you're here. This will not be only available to patrons after the fact. I think we might just let this one ride. And then Fridays will be for patrons after the fact. So it's patrons, of course, members on YouTube and Twitch. We got 120 members on YouTube. That's nothing to sneeze at, but also you should become a member or you should become a patron of this show, patreon.com/bituationroom, to find out what you've been missing, which is usually like some deep dives, good stuff. So I'm thinking Fridays, harder hitting, maybe some foreign policy. Wednesdays, maybe kind of a silly, ridiculous hump day situation, but I also know myself and I know I won't be able to just keep some news for Fridays and some news for Wednesdays. But the point is that you should be able to listen to this as a podcast as well. But if you want access to those Friday shows or you want to just kick me some love because you're like, you know what, Francesca, she's got a 17-month-old baby and she's adding a stream. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Here we go. Let's go. Me and my not Stanley Cup. Patreon.com/bituationroom. We got some questions about Diddy. Diddy. Let's just talk about Diddy for like half a second. Who even puts Puff Daddy? I'm like, sorry, all due respect. I can't really name a song. I truly can't. I think he did one with Biggie. Isn't that Biggie, 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 Can't You See? Like that, isn't that him? Didn't he produce that? Like, he doesn't go down as one of the greatest rappers or even really producers. And then he changed his name to P. Diddy. And you're like, okay, I guess. And then he disappears. And then you're like, oh, now his homes are being raided for sex trafficking. Cool. And this stems from an ex-partner of his suing him for precisely sex trafficking and rape and a bunch of other awful things. We'll see how this goes down. But, as some folks might know, I do like Cardi B. I do like Megan Thee Stallion. I like a little bit of rap drama. From time to time. And if 50 Cent is on one side of an issue, even though the dude had the misfortune, or maybe it was just a misfortunate situation in general on both sides, had the misfortune to sleep with Chelsea Handler, who has revealed herself to be a rabid Zionist. But I like 50 Cent. He has complained about paying taxes as, a lot of rich people do, but if I'm gonna choose, and 50 Cent's currently working on a documentary about Puff Daddy, which is bold, right? Because you don't work on a documentary unless you know your own record is clean, I'm assuming. So we shall see. And I guess 50 Cent put out some sort of like a milk carton image, which is like, where is Jay? Because I guess Jay-Z and P. Diddy are friends or were friends. I think Prince Harry has just been named in one of the suits against, I mean, not named as like a defendant, but like named as someone who was maybe with P. Diddy at a party or some shit. It's all very early 2000s vibes. Speaking of Prince Harry, I do want to name that on Friday, I think we might be watching my appearance on Piers Morgan if they don't cut me. I was on Piers Morgan's show, Uncensored. Along with, I think, 27 other people. It was a big panel. And I was the only person left of Nikki Haley, maybe, like that milieu. Like, I think there was sort of a centrist Republican on the panel, and everyone else was just eats paint chips. Like, I do not know where they find people sometimes. I don't know where I'm here. I understand. Like, I'm just as anonymous, but like, at least I'm anonymous and making some amount of sense. Like, at least I like read, you know what I'm saying? Not a lot, but I read some. But I guess the goal, and no disrespect to peers, but you know, I think the goal when you have people on is to make you look smarter. So in that sense, I understand why he chose the panel he did. But yes, I was on, it was very interesting. I was in a van, just a studio van in my neighborhood. So you can check out that on Instagram. I posted a little bit about it, but maybe we can watch it on Friday. You tell me how I did. Started off strong and I ended with a free Palestine, no big deal. But yeah, it was weird. Yeah, TBR is on a Wednesday, y'all. That get at this. Act like you know. Here's the question. Do we do light? Do we not do light? Let's do a few light stories. Maybe this one has a tinge of more. All right, let's just talk about this bridge. One of the topics we talked about with Piers Morgan was the bridge, right? And like immediately, as you'll see, he's like, isn't it crazy that some people are saying it was a cyber attack? And one of the guests was like, well, how do you know it wasn't? And I was just like, oh boy, we are, this is what we're working with here. But because everyone is trash, there has to be like some reason that this massive cargo ship slammed into a bridge, and then suddenly everyone's a fucking engineer and everyone's like, the bridges don't fall. Like, you don't know how bridges fall. How many model cargo ships and waterways with bridge, like how many tests have you run on how bridges fall or don't fall? Like, seriously, you have no idea. And when a fucking massive cargo ship hits one of the two main pillars of a bridge, you can probably bet it's going to throw it off its axis and crumble. And that's exactly what happened. But of course, there's like rampant conspiracy theories about it. But not only that, there's like takes on it that are, this is what happens in Biden's America. And also, this is what happens when you have a DEI, in quotes, mayor. Now, I think the mayor's name is Brandon Wilson. This is me showing you how much prep I'm going to do for the show. Brandon Scott, who's a black man, because the city of Baltimore is like 80% black. So not everything is DEI, you racist fucks. But this is the thing. It's like everyone looks to either it's a conspiracy or we have to blame someone. Nothing can just be a tragedy. That is, unless it has to do with gun violence and has to do with a mass shooting and an AR-15, which is the gun used in literally every mass shooting. And then it's like, thoughts and prayers, no idea. There could be no causal link between any of these things. Then it's just a tragedy. But if it's like, no, the power went out to this cargo ship. It was incredibly wild what happened. It's got to be something, right? Maria Bartiromo blaming undocumented immigrants. Cool. Nancy Mace blaming infrastructure. Like, this bitch didn't vote against Biden's infrastructure bill. Like, arguably, the construction workers who were immigrants who died were filling in potholes, probably thanks to federal funds. I mean, again, I'm not saying this definite, but like, thanks to federal funds from the American Infrastructure Act or plan, right? That was signed by Joe Biden. So there we go. $715 billion. Highway aid, transit, safety. Like, You know, this is the thing with the libertarians. Like, you need roads, dog. Like, at some point, you're going to need roads. But no, this is all Biden's fault. Like, again, it's just, it's so sad that we have to have an angle on this other than this is a horrible tragedy. And let's remember that the people who are always in the crosshairs of tragedy are workers. 9 times out of 10. Look at COVID. I mean, and that's how you know. It's like if anyone in news media or any pundit had ever worked a day in their life, you know what I mean? There wouldn't be a narrative of this is undocumented immigrants' fault. This is Joe Biden's fault. It's just like, it's just incredible how much we don't understand about fucking anything. And that everyone wants to be a goddamn engineer or like a construction worker who actually knows what the hell went down, which is such a big reason why like COVID was so easy to spin, is because none of the fools on television, none of the people with these massive podcasts, you know, Rogan is not out there day in and day out working at a fucking Walmart for minimum wage. He's got to have an angle on it. That was the thing about COVID, is it's like, and the same thing, and you see with this kind of tragedy, like here is an instance, it nothing could have been done to prevent it except for, you know, in the case of COVID, you know, Donald Trump knew that it was affecting, it was going to affect Americans much longer than he let on. And the right has to have a spin. They've got to have an angle. It's the biggest news story. And it can't just be, let's be careful and safe. They've got to have their own twist on it that is completely absent of reality, devoid of facts. And that is, it's fake. It's just a flu. And now we're going to latch on to the anti-vax movement. Like it is privileged nobodies, out of touch fools telling we the people and folks on the ground who like live it every single day, got COVID multiple times, suffer with long COVID, that what they're experiencing isn't real. I mean, that's how things are so easily laundered. And because they have a fucking cyber truck. Oh my God, guys, when we watched this Piers Morgan, like, let me tell you, I am worried for the American brain here. Like the number of times that these people, including Piers, named Elon Musk in the span of 30 minutes, like, do people really follow what Elon Musk says like that? Like, you know, he's just a rich man having a midlife crisis, right? Like, you know that he's not smart. He's not a good businessman. You've seen the way he tanked X or whatever. Like, you know, he's not, I mean, you could politically agree with him, but you know, he's not actually like an ideas guy. Like, he's not even the ideas guy. He's certainly not a hard worker. But he's definitely not an innovator. And folks fucking reference him like they're going to get a spot in the fucking Elysium, you know, whatever, like escape hatch that he's building when Earth goes to shit. Like, you're not going to get a spot on Elysium. Plus, if Elon's the one building Elysium, that shit is not going to last. But anyway. Let's go into this. This is random, but it's fun for me because I have a little bit of a bone to pick. You guys know that Sacha Baron Cohen is a piece of shit, right? I liked Borat a lot. I liked Bruno a little bit less, but I liked Ali G and all the characters. I think he's brilliant. I have like a lot of respect for him comedically. I do think that Borat was ultimately like, you know, he was like punching down in order to punch up, you know, making fun of Kazakhs, making fun of, you know, Muslims, but also to sort of ultimately reveal how racist Americans are. And don't you see what he's doing? And it's like, I could give him that much. I know a lot of people disagree with me. That's totally fine. If you think it was purely punching down, I think that you might be right at the end of the day. Because we know since the attacks by Hamas, that Sacha Baron Cohen has been one of these celebrity voices behind the scenes doing a number of fuck shit, right? Like, fuck shit number one, lobbying around TikTok, right? We saw that, we read that initially, like in the days after the months after October 7th that like Sacha Baron Cohen was on with lobbying Congress, lobbying TikTok, or lobbying Congress around TikTok. Like, you've got to rein this in. There's a lot of Palestine information being spread, or as they call it, anti-Semitism. So we need to rein that in. Which again, as I said at the time, is a perfect encapsulation of the idea that this free speech guy, right, this comedy guy, this guy who can make fun of everybody and anything, and yeah, he makes fun of, ah, look at the Arab dictators, and aren't they all silly and ridiculous, and they love oil, and look at the stupid Kazakhs, and they're so backwards, and they sleep with their sisters, and it's so funny, and yet, like, he's got this one issue that he's completely no-go zone for him. He's completely off limits, which is criticizing Israeli policy. It's not anti-Semitism. It's not making fun of Jews. Not like he makes fun of Muslims. It's literally just criticizing the occupation, and that is his red line. Suddenly he can dish it out, but he can't take it on some like actual real shit. I mean, even he made fun of Mossad. I don't know if you guys remember, he's got his show This Is or Who Is America, and one of his brilliant characters was a Mossad agent that got Dick Cheney to sign a waterboard. Like, you don't do that kind of material if you don't ultimately know that Israeli society is incredibly militaristic. And for and what, like, what did that Mossad agent show? That they relish in torture, they support it, and lo and behold, now we have seen it, as, for example, to pick an example, Al-Shifa Hospital is once again under attack with injured men, women, and children being massacred. So, but this is more like, you know, we always knew maybe this dude not only is not that great of an actor when it comes to acting, but like, that he's kind of a POS. So this is him. Hang on. Let's go to the original story if I actually have it at all. Rebel Wilson is, I guess, coming out with a new... Fuck you. It's going to be endless pop-up screens for me. No thanks, AV Club. Rebel Wilson, I think, is coming out with a new memoir, and I think one of the chapters is something like No Assholes. And apparently, her new memoir, Rebel Rising, and apparently the chapter is based on Sacha Baron Cohen. She hated working with him so much, she instituted a new policy, no assholes, when taking jobs. She says, when I first came to Hollywood, people were like, yeah, I have a no assholes policy. It means I don't work with assholes. She sent an Instagram video, but then it really sunk in that they were what they were meaning by that, because I work with a massive asshole, and yeah, now I definitely have a no assholes policy. That is chapter 23. She has now revealed the asshole Sacha Baron Cohen, who she starred with on the 2016 flop The Brothers Grimsby. All right, let's take a look.
So when I first came to Hollywood, people were like, yeah, I have a no asshole policy. Means like, yeah, I don't work with assholes. I was like, oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, that sounds sensible, logical. But then it really sunk in what they were meaning by that, older people in the industry, because I worked with a massive asshole, and yeah, now I definitely have a no assholes policy. The chapter on said asshole is chapter 23. That guy was a massive asshole.
Okay, but I think she revealed that it was Sacha Baron Cohen. The details are just so fucking misogynistic and stupid shit. Like, shit that you're just like, what? Like, this sounds awful to me. So it's not only, again, hypocritic Zionist, but I guess a dick. She said that back in production in 2014, this is, again, for Brothers Grimm, which I didn't see. I don't know if anyone saw it. He said, every day he's like, just go naked, it will be funny. Remember in Borat when I did that naked scene? It was hilarious. Revealing that he eventually hired a body double for the scene, which is very funny. That, like, I think she means that he himself hired a body double when he went naked, but not before she threatened to call their shared agent and tell her how much you are harassing me. She also said that at the time, Cohen encouraged her to put her finger up his butt in the film's final scene because, quote, it'll be a really funny bit, even though there was nothing of the sort in the script. Quote, you don't want to be a diva, so I said I'll slap you once on the butt and that's it, Wilson explained. So again, he's clearly just being a raging misogynist. He's like sexually harassing her. And she then was like, all right, fine, I'll hit you on the butt. Gross. But in a statement, Cohen's representation pushed back against Wilson's claims in a statement to AV Club, which is very important. You know, he's making sure that he hits all the news media outlets. And his representation said, quote, while we appreciate the importance of speaking out, these demonstrably false claims are directly contradicted by extensive detailed evidence, including contemporaneous documents, film footage, and eyewitness accounts from those present before, during, and after the production of Brothers Grimsby. Just like, okay, bro. Okay. It sounds like you're trying to excuse, like, an Israeli attack on a hospital in Gaza. Nobody asked you. It's just so legalese and so clear. And just, like, just let it ride, dog. Like, it's not that she said that you, like, assaulted her. Just let it ride. That's the thing about it. Like, you wouldn't need to say shit if you felt like... Like, if it's nothing, then treat it like nothing. Don't respond. And she wrote that, or she said that she's not going to be bullied or silenced by high-priced lawyers or PR crisis managers. That's what I'm talking about in one chapter of my book is Sacha Baron Cohen. And then they said that, blah, blah, blah. You want to know the people behind the camera have a certain sensibility and decency. And a lot of times in comedy, they're not those people. Yeah. I mean, I think it's easy to sort of like couch something as this will be funny or this will be comedic and we'll all get a laugh or, you know, what are you going to be such a prude? Like, why are you going to be like, don't do that. Don't be like that. Be funny. Like, I swear I'm the arbiter of funny as a dude. And I say, if you stick your finger in my butt, it'll be funny. Sounds like you just want a finger up your ass, dog. You could put a finger up your ass. You could do that yourself in your own time. Anyway, that must have sucked. It's also like, really? Like, can a good actor be the one to do that? But I guess not. I guess you kind of have to. You got to make up for something. Here's a very random story and a very random pivot for a random Wednesday bonus situation room. Hey everyone, I wanted to take a moment to let you know about Factor Meals. I'm not sure if you've heard about Factor Meals, but let me explain. Factor are meals delivered to your door that are 100% ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. Now, this is really important if you're a parent like me, and sometimes you don't know what you're having for lunch or dinner, or whether or not the baby's going to throw a fit in the middle of a restaurant, so you need to like eat in a park randomly, or in my case, you need to eat on a 6-hour drive, which we actually did, and we ate Factor meals. In fact, I think the mushroom risotto, which was excellent, like surprisingly delicious. And each week you get 35 different options to choose from. You've got keto, calorie smart, vegan, veggie, all that stuff. It's the perfect solution if you're looking for fast but also upscale options done easily. Check it out. Head to factormeals.com/bituation50 and use code bituation50 to get, that's right, 50% off. That's code bituation50 at factormeals.com/bituation50 and taste it for yourself. I'm telling you right now, it's good. A male humanoid robot was unveiled in Saudi Arabia. Ooh, cool. Was it Jared Kushner? It then inappropriately touched a female reporter. You know, look. If you're going to release a robot, you should teach it. Well, don't let actual human men teach it how to act, because it's just going to end up like this. But this is very funny. I don't know if it was seen as a problem, but here is this sort of glassy-eyed I don't know what kind, I don't know how to describe this non-man humanoid. He's got kind eyes and nice full lips and an interesting beard. But just a little dead inside, like not really my type, you know? There's something about him, you know, but I get it. So a Saudi robotics company's unveiling of a male humanoid robot didn't go as planned after it appeared to inappropriately touch a female reporter. Saudi robotics company's QSS debuted Mohammed the humanoid robot. You know, why you got to do the prophet like that? You know what I'm saying? Give him a different name for now. And then if he doesn't touch women, then you can give him that nice name. At Deep Fest in Riyadh, I don't even want to know what's at Deep Fest. The robot, dressed in traditional Saudi attire, spoke Arabic and English in, oh boy, we're going to have to look at this. In a Deep Fest post on X, Mohammed was described as the first Saudi robot in the form of a man, as well as a national project to highlight Saudi Arabia's AI achievements. Does it have more rights than human women? Probably. During a presentation, a reporter for Al Arabiya, Rawa Qasim, stood in front of Mohammed as she spoke to the audience. A viral video of the incident showed the robot appearing to extend a hand forward to touch her backside. In the clip, Qasim can be seen as responding with a stern glare, followed by a raised palm at Mohammed before she continues to, oh, she was going to slap him? Can you teach him a lesson? Oh boy. Okay. Well, we're going to probably have to watch this. But again, I apologize. Not everything's queued up because it's just myself and I running these things, people, for these little bonuses. Mama got to get an intern. Okay, this is just music, but I am Mohammed, the first Saudi robot in the form of a man. I was manufactured and developed here in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia as a national project to demonstrate our achievements in the field of artificial intelligence. Also, you know, Jared Kushner, that's us. Okay, that's boring. Can he do something? All right, we're gonna have to go back to that. Give me a second. We need stall music on my bonus stream here. But if you're just joining me, this is a bonus bish. I'm hoping to do lighter stories on Wednesdays, but we will see if I'm at all successful in doing that. Because you know, sometimes shit gets real, and I can't wait till Friday, and I can't wait till Tuesday. But support the show. Hang on, let me just put in my authenticator app here. Okay, so here we go. Okay. What the fuck? Okay, if you're listening as a podcast, it is 8 seconds long. And this reporter with Al Arabiya is speaking. And she's standing in front of Mohammed. And I'm going to try to zoom in here so you can see this. Okay. What is this, Mohammed? Yo, what's that? So he's just standing there and then he kind of leans in and she's like, excuse me. She like leans away and puts up her hand like, no. I thought she was like really going to backhand him in the description. I know we just talked about Sacha Baron Cohen. I wish he wasn't so awful because this honestly kind of feels like one of his sketches. This is so ridiculous. Dude reaches out a hand. Down, Mohammed. No. Haram, haram. That's so fucked. I love her. She's like, the eyes are like, now. And also, is this really happening? See, here's the thing about AI. We can't have nice things. You guys think like, especially dudes are so obsessed. They're like, they're obsessed with the fucking singularity. They can't wait for AI to, you know, like, and what happens? We make sex dolls imitating women, replacing women, So, you know, Elon never has to learn social skills and all the Elon stands. And then you got robots that are groping reporters. Like, do you understand the upside down world for women in this world? Like, do you understand, like, the world we live in? I don't think you do unless you are one, unless you truly, like, this is the kind of shit that you're like, you know what? I bet somewhere out there in the universe, there is a matriarchal society that's actually crushing it. You know, let's go to Barbie land. Fuck it. You know what I'm saying? I'll wear a pantsuit. I hope Hillary Clinton's not there, but why not? Because even in our futuristic dream world of like, hey, you know, this is Muhammad could do your chores for you. He could do your homework. He could grope your reporters for you. Like, this is the hell world that we somehow live in. And then he'll try and pay you off with like a horse or something. But also, can you sue humanoid robots for sexual assault? Like, is that's where we're headed? You guys remember when like fucking the metaverse came out and people were like, yeah, people are being sexually assaulted in the metaverse. Like, what? We can't have nice things. I don't know. Wait, hang on. There's also, okay, so that was what Muhammad, that's the man. There's also actually a woman. And this is the headline with the woman. Saudi Arabia's first humanoid robot knows not to talk about sex or politics, its creator said. Saudi Arabia's humanoid robot won't talk about sex or politics because she's Saudi, her creator says. Sarah knows she's a girl. You mean a woman? This is the other thing. I'm sorry. Like, if you're a grown-ass man calling women girls, like, truly, you need, like, stick your own finger up your butt. Like, you, what is wrong with you? I can't even get into it, but it's just like, it's not just Saudi Arabia. I'm saying it's misogynist all around. Like, yeah, this girl, like, or a girl. Like, no, it's a woman. You can say woman. Don't you love to, like, define womanhood and be like, what is a woman? Aren't you, like, don't you not like to sexualize, like, kids? Or isn't that your whole thing? You need to talk about it a lot. Don't say girl. Just say woman. It's okay. So Muhammad gropes and Sarah knows that she's a girl. Metri added she should be nice, not talking politics, not talking sex, because we're in Saudi Arabia. It shouldn't go into those topics. Oh boy. Does she cook and clean? I fucking hope so. Anyway. Guys, misogyny is one hell of a drug. So these are the stories. I'm sorry. You're welcome. I'm sorry. Thank you so much, Zane, for becoming a member on YouTube. I'm just going to read a couple super chats. And thank you guys so much. Barb LC says, it was a conspiracy to deregulate the transportation sector. In terms of the cargo ship accident. Yeah, I mean, I think too late. Ask the airline industry how much it's been deregulated. And as we talked about on the show, you know, and David Dayan explained, like, Biden is actually doing what he can to prevent mergers like Spirit Airlines and whatever the hell else they wanted to merge with. Like, that actually leads to greater lack of safety, more corners cut, because it's all about, again, bottom lines for your shareholders, making more money, and safety be damned. I mean, it's just so, it's so ridiculous. So, but again, if you think that Elon is going to give you a slot on the like Hyperloop, which is just a tunnel full of traffic, then you don't care about regulation. Kathy Ann, thank you for your super chat. You're the best. Lumpin Lodge, thank you for your super chat, says Nazbols are infesting the U.S. left. I don't disagree. I don't think it's everywhere, but I do think there is a slippery slope with some leftist thinking that is like an overreaction to Democrats, and how Democrats sort of bad faith use identity politics. And that is sort of a jumping off point for a lot of leftists to throw out identity politics altogether rather than remember what they were originally about, which is an understanding of power and an understanding of who the working class and the most oppressed are in this country. And that is people of color and women, and having a white supremacist, capitalist, patriarchal analysis, to put it in bell hooksian terms, rather than just only a class analysis, which honestly, at the end of the day, just sounds like a Nancy Pelosiism. You know, I said this the other day on the Young Turks, because James Carville, you know, and I'm not talking about this, but James Carville went off about, first of all, I'm pretty sure James Carville hates women. That much is clear. But James Carville, obviously, the raging Cajun, you know, and he goes on leftist. He goes on establishment Democratic media all the time. He's always texting us like, "Hi, it's James Carville. And yeah, my gums are chattering out of my mouth right now. But here's what I know. Nobody likes pussy anymore. And ladies be bop, 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 and they need to shut up." But basically, like, he was accusing the Democrats of having too many uppity women, too many, like, brassy, loudmouth women. And you got to remember that actually when you overreact to bad faith identity politics, some leftists can slip into that exact same sand trap of saying that it's the fact that Hillary Clinton talked too much about being a woman. No, fucking Hillary Clinton. The reason Hillary Clinton, it was obnoxious that she talked about being a woman is because that's all she had. It's that she didn't have like an actual analysis, economic analysis of what it means to be a woman, right? She didn't really talk about the pay gap. She didn't talk about codifying Roe v. Wade. She didn't talk about, you know, union rights vis-a-vis the fact that women are the majority of the working class, or domestic work, as you know, whether it's in elder care or child care or anything like that. She did not. It was just, "Hey, I'm a woman, and isn't that great?" Like, that was it. It was the lack of robust identity politics, along with not visiting, you know, Michigan and other things she should have been doing, that meant that she lost. So it's really weird when you, and when she lost, and this is the thing I always say, and I want everyone to remember, Nancy Pelosi said that Hillary Clinton shouldn't have talked about being a woman as much. Nancy Pelosi also said you can be a Democrat and be against the right to choose. Bullshit one and bullshit two. I call bullshit on whatever you're laying down. And trust me, I've had a vagina for many more years than you've had a vagina. Yeah, I've been in the vagina game for a long time. And let me tell you, sometimes you just got to close it up. But remember that centrist Democrats also hate identity politics. It is part and parcel of their attempt to win back the centrist Republicans, the elusive, you know, swing voter, is to, you know, tamp down about all that, you know, my body, my choice stuff. It's to tamp down about racial justice. It's to tamp down about anything that differentiates you from the identity politics of the dominant, which is white, male, heteronormative, rich shit. Anyway, that's all I got to say about that. Robert, thank you for your super chat. Says, Republicans after a school shooting, don't politicize tragedy. Republicans after a ship knocks down a bridge, let's politicize tragedy. Exactly. Cassandra Kapranica, with the best alliterative name, humming Garota de Ipanema on this story. Genius, Miss Fiorentini. Yeah, I mean, it's always got to be Ipanema, the ultimate waiting music. Sailor Digerin, thank you for your super chat. This reminds me of the SNL sketch with The Rock where he's an evil scientist who builds a child molesting robot. I don't remember that sketch, but that's very funny. Oh, yay, yay. Anyway, let's talk about this maybe because it's interesting, and I'll save this, the soft stories for Friday. Soft. But another State Department official just resigned. You guys know that we had Tara Kabash on the show, who was working in the Department of Education, and he resigned in protest. He's Palestinian American over Biden's handling of the war in Gaza. And maybe we can, the genocide in Gaza. And maybe on Friday, we'll talk about new reports that Biden knew as recently or as long ago as October that Israel was deliberately targeting civilians. Look, this is, this is going to keep being an issue. This doesn't go away. This isn't going away. This gets worse. So I know we're all waiting for the Gaza stuff to blow over. It doesn't. It is worse. There's every day more footage. You know, I see we've got taxes coming up. All of our tax money is going to war. This is nothing. You guys know where I stand on strategic voting. You guys know this has nothing to do with not fucking holding your nose and voting for Joe Biden in November, but it means to hound the fuck out of him and anyone else who on the Democratic side of the aisle, the Republican side of the aisle is like, more blood. We want more blood. Donald Trump, let's finish it up. That's what he said this week. They got to wrap it up. Wrap it up, B. Finish it up. Finish the job. Which honestly is not wildly different than what Democrats are saying. But again, we wedge our foot in the door where that little heartbeat that Democrats sometimes have, occasionally, when they stop receiving the AIPAC money and it just sort of like there's a moment there. And I'd rather be fighting these warmongers than those warmongers. So, however, I'm not going to shut up about this, and no one should be shutting up about this. And the State Department, the very State Department has been in disarray since the beginning of this. Anthony Blinken from, I think, November was saying there is no military solution to the question of Hamas. Let me repeat that. He said there is no military solution to the question of Hamas. I know that I should be pulling up a bunch of video to support everything I'm saying, but trust me when I tell you that this is what he said. So what does that mean when there's no military solution to Hamas? It means waiting for Israel to, quote unquote, finish the job. The job is never over. But that's because the United States leadership has been duped by the idea that this attack has anything to do with Hamas. It doesn't. It has to do with the reconquest of Gaza. It has to do with the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. And it has to do with the completion of the nation-building project of Israel. A human rights staffer quits over Biden's Gaza policy. Yeah, about fucking time. I can't imagine the agony that this person was going through. State Department official working on human rights issues in the Middle East resigned Wednesday in protest of the U.S.'s support for Israel's war in Gaza. The latest example of dissent among government personnel bursting into public view. Anel Shaleen, 38 years old, stepped down after a year as foreign affairs officer in the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, with nearly half that tenure marked by the war on Israel, by the war Israel launched in response to a devastating Hamas attack on October 7th. Thank you, Washington Post, for saying devastating. I didn't know that October 7th was devastating. And then you put it there. Which, if you didn't say devastating, you'd be anti-Semitic. We've established that. In an interview, Shaleen said that her focus had been promoting human rights in the Middle East and North Africa. Oh, girl. Work that was complicated by Israel's war and a host of accompanying moral, legal, security, and diplomatic implications for the United States. Shaleen said she tried to raise concerns internally with dissent cables and at staff forums, but eventually concluded that it was pointless as long as the U.S. continues to send a steady stream of weapons to Israel, unquote. I wasn't able to do my job anymore, she said. Trying to advocate for human rights just became impossible. Yeah. It's like, even when your aid packages are killing people, when just... Shailene's departure is the most significant protest resignation over the Gaza conflict since the exit of Josh Paul, who was a senior State Department official involved in arms transfers to foreign governments. In a statement to the Washington Post, Paul commended Shailene for her decision, noting that she's leaving the bureau tasked with championing universal values, including respect for the rule of law, democratic institutions, and human rights. Like, do you understand how bad something has to be when the head of the guy who deals weapons to countries around the world is like, maybe we've gone a bridge too far? Like, do you know the kinds of warmongers and thugs that the United States regularly delivers weapons to? The cartels, probably, that they end up in the hands of, the strike breakers, the dictators. Just like that, to be like, here's where I draw the line. You gotta know that, number one, they've had enough, like that Israel's got enough weapons for to last them for many more wars over, but that also, like, shit's got to get so bad and so egregious, and nothing appears to be moving this administration, that you see no other recourse but to resign. And obviously, human rights in the region, come on, that's just, again, the agony. Paul echoing pretty much what I said, when the staff of a bureau feel that there's no more they can do, it speaks volumes about the Biden administration's disregard for the laws, policies, and basic humanity of American foreign policy that the bureau exists to advance. Shailene said she planned to leave quietly, telling her bosses it was over Gaza, but decided to speak up at the request of colleagues who told her they wanted her to resign but couldn't because of financial or family concerns. And that, I think, is, I mean, that's very real. An internal listening sessions on the war, she said. Oh, God. Are they having listening sessions in the State Department? It's like, we're going to do trust falls, and those who only want to send 50 massive weapons transfers to Israel will catch those who want to send an unlimited number of weapons transfers to Israel. And then we'll just talk about it. We hear you. We see you. We will be giving you hand sanitizer to wash the blood off of them. At one of those meetings, Shailene recalled she asked about administration priorities, competition with China, human rights, climate change, and she felt they were being undermined by blank check support for Israel. My question was, why is this support for Israel seen as more important than all these other arguably very significant priorities? She said, I still don't feel like I have a great answer as to why. I don't think anyone does. I don't think Biden does. Only a handful of officials have left government over the war. For months, however, workers have telegraphed discontent over Israel policy in other ways. At the State Department, officials have written multiple cables in the Dissent Channel, a Vietnam War era mechanism for internal protest. Multiple cables on, like, this is like what media organizations need to be covering, and yet they don't. It's huge. At the U.S. Agency for International Development, hundreds of employees endorsed a letter in November calling for the Biden administration to use its leverage to initiate a ceasefire in fucking November. Other officials have challenged agency leaders during public events. In February, an active duty member of the U.S. Air Force, remember Aaron Bushnell, set himself on fire. I mean, again, I stand by what I said. We must wedge our foot in the door and absolutely hound Democrats who take AIPAC money. Our struggle and this fight is a lot longer, and yet we, I know, are winning. The moral high ground and the tides that are definitely and most certainly turning. But it is so difficult to see that broader picture. Number one, when every single day hundreds of people are dying and thousands of people are being starved, and millions of people are being starved. But when it's like, you know, and every fucking lever, every fucking stage, people are voicing their discontent with this atrocity and how much we're greenlighting it, and it's immovable. It feels immovable. And yet, I think we need to remember, were this Trump, because this is the ring of hell we live in. You're not going to see aid being dropped. You're not going to see a pier being built. You're not going to see anyone like spare a thought for Palestinian lives, even if it is just a thought. There will be a total and complete demonization, a relishing in the demonization. But again, it's a litmus test from now on. And we need to, I mean, I don't know. I'm just as bereft, I think, as a lot of people are. Like, anyone who's like trying to fucking rationalize this or make it only a pragmatic situation of Trump v. Biden, don't listen to that bullshit. Like, that's truly bullshit. Like, I'm not making a pragmatic argument here. I am just like, I'm just as torn up as I think we all need to be. The State Department now routinely expresses concern about bloodshed. More than 32,000 Palestinians have been killed, according to the Gaza Health Ministry, which has been devastated. I mean, the number hasn't moved in weeks, right? And that's because we just don't know. Anyway, yeah, she worked at the. So this is what's interesting about Shailene. She worked at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft as a researcher. So that's the difference, right? It's like, if we only didn't have fucking Biden at the helm of this administration, this administration's pretty dope. The Quincy Institute is great. Like, Trita Parsi has come on my show multiple times. Many times. He's excellent. You know, Lena Khan, excellent. But the guy at the helm is leading some great people, but leading them in an aimless direction, in the opposite direction. I mean, you see someone like Tara Kabash, who was on my show, like, he's great. Like, I'm so, you know, you meet some of these, it's bizarre that we have to meet these officials on their way out in resignation, in protest. But you're like, oh, shit. The Biden administration hired this like young, dope, fairly progressive voice. That's amazing. You know, it demystifies who these folks are. These are their best allies, these young people, these people of color, 9 times out of 10, right? But they have to resign in protest. Yesterday we talked with Natasha Yulman about Biden's immigration policy. And I meant to bring up the Biden administration official who resigned a long time ago. Trying to find what her name is. But she was a young Latino woman who was like, we're going in the opposite direction. I don't know what to do. I'm trying to find her name because we talked about her at the time. The U.S. envoy to Haiti also like resigns recently, but that makes sense. Who is this woman? Anyway, maybe I will talk about it on Friday. I apologize. But again, it's like in some areas, this administration is doing good things. And in a lot of others, specifically when it comes to Israel and the border, it's completely wrong. I know a lot of people probably disagree with me, and that's fine. I'm going to wind this down. Thank you for listening. Remember to give this podcast 5 stars. If you are like, wow, this was an hour of Francesca talking, you're welcome. And that is what this bonus show is going to be on Wednesdays. And again, with some lighter stories, always send me story ideas, please. And it'll be free to listen to. A Friday show will still be only available to patrons after it streams. This I'll keep up. But let's see. Everybody, have a good rest of your week. Sean William, I generally like your content. Why not stick with the Majority Report? I think you're good enough to make it without Cenk or Anna working. So the Majority Report, I just go on as like a guest, a friend, whenever they ask. And I think everyone's kind of struggling. Like, it's not an easy time in news media. And I love filling in for Cenk and Anna, either with one or both of them. I love being on with John, but this is a way to basically like expand what I do and hang with all y'all and like, you know, create the, you know, spread the Frantifa. Do you know what I'm saying? It's that blend. It's that comedy. It's that not taking ourselves too seriously. It's that principled radical leftism. It's that, you know, we can laugh at stupid shit. It's that vibe. So this is me trying to go it alone. And if you want to support, patreon.com/bituationroom, or become a member on YouTube, or become a member on Twitch. Remember, there's so many perks, including access to Ask Me Anythings, including discounts on merch, 20% off, including discounts on the American Prospect magazine, which I write for every single edition, including access to all of the back episodes, because there is a long backlog of them. You get a special little RSS feed. Once you join the Patreon, it'll give you a link and it gives you like a cute little colorful logo that's like, you're special, yay. But most importantly, you allow me to do this kind of stuff. And that I appreciate you for endlessly. I will see you guys Friday. Thank you so much. And send me stories, and I love y'all.